Most people, when they think of like a good salesperson, they think of someone who's really good looking and charismatic and they're a smooth talker. And I don't know, I don't think I'm any of those things really. I think if you look at the heart of sales, really it's a couple key elements. One is you need to have conversations with people.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Build Your Book podcast. This is your host, Aaron Baer and Dhaval Tank. Every week, we bring to you stories about the legal profession to help lawyers build a better book of business, a better practice, and a better life. Let's get started.
All right, it's wonderful today that we're joined by Nick Sagelski. We're really excited to have you on. You know, you are the host of the 30 Minutes to President's Club podcast. You've been a head wrestling coach at USC. You invest in real estate. You do so many different things, but really the through line of everything you've been doing is you've been in sales. And specifically recently, as of recently, you've been selling to lawyers. So I think the listeners are going to get a really good perspective on what it takes to sell to lawyers, what sales looks like from someone who's been a pro at it for such a long time, and from someone who literally runs a podcast, helping salespeople craft messages, you know, be their best selves and actually go out there and get more sales. So wonderful to have you on today, Nick.
I am really looking forward to today's conversation.
Wonderful. You know, I really want to start off right from the beginning. You started off at USC, you were doing PR, and then you somehow got into sales. I'm wondering what your journey was like to get into sales, and was that by choice? Were you kind of reluctant to join it? Did you have misconceptions about what sales was going to be like? And how did that whole thing pan out for you?
Well, I, of course, had a misconception about sales. Most people who think of like a salesperson don't understand the different, I think, levels to sales that exist out there. And what I mean by that is, there's a difference between, like, I don't know, hawking phone cases at the mall and real sophisticated value-based selling. I did not want to go into sales. I don't think anybody says, I'm going to be a salesperson when I grow up. I started a company when I was in college with one of my wrestling teammates. And part of the start of that company was trying to find business. And it was a vending machine company, actually, but it wasn't just like we're selling Coke out of a vending machine. We were selling protein powder and other workout supplements. And so we had to form partnerships with gyms. And at one point, we formed a partnership with LA Fitness, which is one of the biggest gym chains in the United States. And the most exciting part of starting that business and building that company was sitting down with some of the executives at LA Fitness to actually negotiate a deal and set up a partnership. That startup ended up fizzling out. It didn't go anywhere. And I had to get a real job. And so when I thought about, well, what the heck do I do next? I thought about, what did I like the most about founding this company? And it was the business development and the partnership side of things. And I was interested in technology, and I thought, well, why don't I go and get into tech sales? And so I did. I took an entry-level tech sales job where I was cold calling for 8 hours a day, and that was a lot of fun, and we can talk about that, but that's how I ended up getting into sales. And it's actually interesting, especially in the world of technology sales, you start to really get interested in the technology side of things, and it's really helped me develop a lot of my other professional communication skills beyond just picking up the phone and telemarketing.
I think that's the misconception that people have, that it's about telemarketing. It's about interrupting people in the middle of something busy and, you know, kind of slicking your hair back and kind of schmoozing with them and whining and dining them. And that's what they think sales is all about. But you're talking about this higher level of sales, this more value-driven methodology of sales, the one that's driven by true insight, the one that's driven by a deep understanding of technology. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that actually looks like? What's that actual sales methodology look like? Is it a different philosophy altogether? Is it a different set of questions? What does that actually look like concretely?
Right. Most people, when they think of like a good salesperson, they think of someone who's really good looking and charismatic and they're a smooth talker. And I don't know. I don't think I'm any of those things, really. I think if you look at the heart of sales, really, it's a couple key elements. One is you need to have conversations with people. And I think most people do more harm than good when they go out intentionally wanting to sell, because they think they need to put their sales hat on and start selling in their conversations. And that's not really it. The best sales conversations I have, I ask a lot of questions. I listen. I ask more good questions to pull out specific threads to really understand how I can help the other person. And then, because I've learned so much about their specific situation and specifically where they're struggling, I'm able to talk for about 45 seconds about, well, based on these 8 things that you've told me, here's a couple ideas that I have about how I might be able to help you. Would you like to work together? It's that. Instead, what most people do when they think about selling is they think that they've got to beat their chest and demonstrate credibility and like box the person into pulling out their credit card. It's actually the opposite. The best salespeople spend a lot more time asking questions and listening than proving their worth.
This is an important point, because quite often lawyers are stuck between this false dichotomy where they think that, well, I need to just demonstrate my credibility. I need to show them that I'm this super lawyer who is always buttoned up, who has all the answers, who's completely invulnerable. And what you're saying is that clients don't really even care about that. They don't really care about what law school you went to. They don't really care about any of that. What they care about is themselves. They care about, well, here's my challenge. Here's what I'm really all about. Can you build enough comfort with me? Can you build enough rapport with me? Can you build enough safety with me where I can talk about those things? And then B, can you actually solve it for me? That's the subconscious or unconscious conversation that's going through their head. Because as soon as a salesperson walks in the door, they already get a little bit guarded up. If you put on that hat deliberately, you are going to just have a more resistance from the client.
Right. I think it's actually about, like, so you sit down for an initial meeting with somebody who's looking for, like, okay, so let's think about it from the perspective of an attorney. You sit down with a prospective client, and that person is dealing with something, and they're looking for some sort of help. And it can sometimes be as simple as, well, tell me why you wanted to meet today. How can I help you? What are you interested in talking about today? Like, part of it is, I think you need to sort of let the other person propose agenda items, let them talk, and then, well, can you tell me more about that? Well, you said something earlier that's sort of interesting. I'd like to learn a little bit more about why you said that. So I hate to just say sales is ask a bunch of questions, but it's the sort of old maxim, seek first to understand before trying to be understood.
It's about digging for these real nuggets. And once you find them, you can really polish them off. You can find real sort of areas of exploration where you can demonstrate your expertise. Because, you know, once you know what the problem is, once you understand not just the problem very from a surface level, but understanding their deeper implications, is that how you typically approach it? It's not just about understanding the problem, but it's about understanding their deeper personal, business, emotional implications of that problem that's in their life.
Right. So there's a couple elements, I think, to really understanding where the person's coming from. I think the first part, before we even talk about like the psychology of it and like getting to the second level understanding, the first part is you need to put that person in a comfortable place to have the conversation with you. What I mean by that is, I'm going to throw an imaginary scenario out there. You've got a 30-minute Zoom meeting with somebody. Before you even start digging into, or, you know, a telephone call with somebody, before you even start digging into like, all right, well, why are we meeting today? How can I help you? Oh, tell me more about that. Step one, I think you've got to make sure that that person, like, you have to tackle the meeting mechanics. Because if you don't have the meeting mechanics, like, sort of laid out and the person is comfortable with it, things can go off the rails. What I mean by that is you want to confirm the time. You want to confirm what they want to talk about and their agenda in the beginning. So here's what it might sound like. If Aaron and I sit down, I might say, Aaron, I'm excited to have this conversation with you today. Just a couple logistics before we start our conversation. I had us down until 9 o'clock this morning. I want to make sure that I respect your time. Do you have a hard stop sooner that I should be looking out for? If they don't, or, you know, if they're good until 9, okay, good. Now you know you have that much time. But if you have less time than that, well, then you might navigate that conversation differently. So regardless, like if they have a hard stop sooner, they've got that in the back of their head. Like, oh my gosh, like does this person know I need to leave? I've got a meeting right after this. So you want to make sure they're comfortable from that standpoint. The other thing is I always try to ask, well, I have some items that I wanted to discuss with you and some things that I wanted to learn from you, but you might have some other things that you really want to make sure we talk about today. Is there anything particular that you'd really like to add to the agenda? And so when you do both of those things, one, they're like comfortable with the amount of time that's allocated and you know the appropriate level of detail and depth of questioning you need to get into. Also, you've given the other person the opportunity to feel like they have some control over where the conversation goes. Because if I just show up to a meeting and just start throwing questions at somebody like an interrogation, well, they're going to push back a little. Why are you asking me all these questions? Like, I need help with X. I didn't even want to talk about the things that you're asking me questions about today. So those are things that I really try to tackle right in the beginning of the meeting. And then once those things are out of the way, then I can start to think about, all right, what types of questions am I going to ask the other person?
So you've done that already. You know, you've seen how much time they have. You've figured out that they have the time, they have the ability to talk about this. What happens next in this sales process for you? You know, how do you start off with, you kind of hinted at it. You just asked, you know, what brought you into the office today? What's your agenda? Is there an element of you know, how do you build that trust and respect between you and the client? And what are you really digging for in your line of questioning?
Well, let's talk about the trust and respect, and then let's talk about the line of questioning. The trust and respect piece, to your point earlier, I don't really care where you went to law school. I guess I don't really even know what the good law schools are. I guess I know if I see Harvard on your resume, you probably are smart, but that's about it. And then, like, I don't even know the prestige of different law firms. So if you worked at a different firm prior to where you are now, like, it doesn't really mean anything to me. Really, the biggest thing is I want to know, like, to your point, do you respect and listen to me? And the best way to do that is, I don't know, listen to the other person. Like, you want to make them feel important and what they're saying is important. So what am I trying to get at in the conversation? I don't think you need to spend a massive amount of time like building rapport and asking about the family and, oh, you like going fishing? Me too. Like, I don't really care about that. I'm speaking to you because I have a challenge that I want to solve. And so I think you start that meeting and okay, is there anything in particular you want to talk about? For me, my line of questioning is I want to get the other person talking about areas that I can help with. And so the questions that I ask are going to point in a very specific direction related to those things. So for me, I sell a practice management time billing and accounting system. And so what I don't want to do with the person that I'm speaking with, if I'm meeting with a managing partner of a law firm, I don't want to ask them about case management or document management challenges. And if they start talking about those things, like I need to call out, well, hey, if that's something you're struggling with, I can't really help with that. Because I don't want to waste that other person's time either. So I think part of the questions that I ask are trying to point the person in the direction of, all right, well, you know, can you tell me a little bit about how you guys are looking at different realization rates at the firm?
And
then that person starts talking. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, then that person starts talking about something that I can actually help with. So part of the line of questioning is you want to get the other person talking about what you might call like your winning zone, areas that you can help the other person.
And at that point, what do you do? Is it just about that's when you step in and demonstrate your value or where do you take that conversation at that point?
I want to spend as little time demonstrating my value as possible. I only will talk about myself or talk about my product or talk about my business when the other person asks me. Until they ask me, there's still more to learn about them. You're never going to get to a point like if you have, let's say this imaginary scenario where you've got 30 minutes with the person and you spend all 30 minutes and they're just telling you about all of their challenges and what they need help with. And well, we can't figure this out and we can't figure this out. And we tried X and Y and Z before and it's been horrible and I'm losing sleep over it. And then you get to the hard stop and you haven't spent any time at all talking about yourself and your credibility and how you can help. Well, that's okay. The person just got a full therapy session. They felt like you listened to them. And then you might say, hey, I know we had a hard stop at 9. It sounds like we might have some more to talk about. And based on what you shared with me, I have a couple ideas of how we might be able to help. Do you want to continue this conversation later this week? If you just spent 30 plus minutes listening to the other person and they felt like you actually listened and they were able to share all of this with you, of course they're going to be open to continuing the conversation. So I think there's a temptation to, the second you hear something that you can help with, to go down that rabbit hole of, oh, well, you just said this, let me explain how I can help. When really you just want to like keep them talking and keep learning, because at a certain point they're going to say, all right, that's pretty much it. I guess, like, can you help me with any of this? Now you have an opportunity to quote unquote pitch.
That makes so much sense, Nick. And it's interesting because, you know, as a lawyer, you know, this is something you're not taught. And it's certainly not a behavior I saw a lot of from more experienced lawyers who I used to work with at my old firm. Although it's interesting because what you're describing, I think, is my natural state. Like, I'm such a curious person in general, and I don't know how I can help you until I understand what your issue is. Plus, I want to understand your business more and what your needs are. And it just makes me think of this old school, you know, lawyer pitching, right? You know, they've got a potential client, maybe a big company, and people would spend all this time preparing for that pitch. They get their PowerPoints and their whatever they're doing. And I would walk into that pitch if I was me and just say, I need to hear about you. Like, how can I pitch you? I'm trying to tell you why I'm so great. I don't understand your issues. You know, I need to understand for you. But lawyers don't think that way. They're so trained. And look at lawyer websites. I went to this school. I've done all these cases. I'm so amazing. But that's not what clients want. Each client is unique. Each client is different. And I feel like it's like with RFPs, you know, requests for proposals. You know, all you're doing usually is saying, here's why I'm so amazing and why I'm going to be the best firm to solve your problems. But I don't even know what your problems are. You know, you've told me you want to do X, but I have a million other questions. And I think if we can get lawyers away from assuming they have the answers and assuming that clients, all they care about is your history, you know, I think they'll be a lot more successful, because that doesn't work anymore. Like, would you agree with that, Nick and Dowell?
I agree with you, Aaron, from the perspective of, I think what you would be solving for a customer or for a client of yours from like a business perspective, I imagine there's a degree of complexity associated with it. I'm not hiring you because you're going to plug and play something. Like, I don't know, you're not just forming an LLC for me and then we're walking away and you bill me for, you know, $500. It's a flat fee. All right, the engagement's done. Like, especially with more complex work, you've probably never experienced something that is specifically 100% what I'm struggling with. But maybe you've done things that are sort of similar. And so I'm more interested in you understanding all of the complexities of my challenge. And then maybe saying, well, you know, I've done work similar to this. I can give you an example and share what another client sort of struggled with and how I helped them. It's not exactly what you dealt with, but I'm more interested in, are you going to exactly understand the complexities of what I'm struggling with? Because if you seem like a competent person and you understand my challenge, I know you're going to be able to help me. You're right. Like, every website I look at for the law firms that I call, it's all the same. It's like a picture of you in a super serious suit and a bunch of really tiny text that I have to squint to look at, and a bunch of cases that kind of look scary to me as a prospective client. And I'm like, I'm overwhelmed. I just want to know that you're a human being, that, like, I need to know that you're competent, of course, but I don't know. Most people, when they like they know you're an attorney, they know you're a lawyer, they're like, all right, I'm assuming this person is competent. So I'm just more interested in, are you going to listen to me? You do that, you're good.
Yeah, you're trying to be human. You're trying to be relatable, you know, and that's what everybody wants. And I think for maybe some people listening who might be thinking, well, I don't want to ask that many questions, you know, I still believe I need to talk more. You know, maybe another way for some lawyers to get at it is, the more you ask and the more you understand about them or their business, the more likely you are to add real value, right? So, you know, sometimes a client will come to me, in fact, this happens all the time, and a client will say, we want to do this. And if I just take them at face value and do that, I'd say way more than half the time, I'm actually going to give them a terrible result. And it's going to be a terrible result, not because I've done something wrong, right? I've followed their instructions. I've done what they asked. But it's because what they think they want is not actually what they need. But to figure out the difference between what they come to me with and what they actually need, I have to ask a bunch of questions. I need to understand their business. I need to understand their motivations. I need to understand, you know, I'm dealing with a client recently and they're just really risk averse. It's interesting. Entrepreneurial, but heavy risk aversion, and that's okay, right? So the solution that they are going to need to help them sleep at night, which is what I'm selling them peace of mind, has a few more bells and whistles than what I would normally suggest for an early stage company. But it's really important to them. They've called me at least 5 or 6 times and followed up, and I can tell, like, this is weighing on them. I've got another client where, again, really anxious about certain things. And so how I respond to them is tailored to that. But if I don't understand these things, if I don't ask the right questions, I think lawyers, because we're not selling software, we're not selling, you know, here's the existing piece, you know, the software, you can either have version A or version B or version C with more features. Like, we're selling sometimes custom stuff. So I think it's just so important. You've got to figure out what do they need, because if you just listen to the client, you're not always going to get to the right place. And that's what the not so good lawyers do, is they don't ask enough questions, and then they deliver results that don't actually help the clients win.
Well, that's a really important point that you just brought up. I have to imagine that most of the clients you deal with come to you with an idea of, like they Googled something and they said, okay, I think we need your help doing this. And you're right. If you take it at face value and just execute on what they tell you and you're an order taker, they don't end up getting the result that, like, would be best for them. And so a response when they come to you, like, with a prescriptive, hey, here's what we need to do, might be, yeah, no problem. I can help you with that. I've done that before. I guess there's a couple different ways of going about what it sounds like you're trying to accomplish here. Could you give me a sense of what you guys are ultimately trying to do? Like, what's the end goal here? What's the reason that you came to me and said X is what you want me to help you with? Because then you understand the motivations behind it and you say, oh, well, it's really interesting that you say that, because normally what you just described would be the right way to go about things 9 times out of 10. But you just said something to me, a little intricate detail that means we actually need to go a different direction. Here's part of the reason why. There's an awesome opportunity there. You just listened to the person. You really understood what's going on behind the scenes. And now talk about demonstrating expertise, because you've picked up on a minute detail and suggested a different direction. Oh, you have so much more credibility, and they're going to come back to you time and time again, because they're like, well, this person actually knows what they're doing and they guided me. They're a trusted advisor instead of an order taker.
That's such an important point. A lot of people think that, well, you know, once I'm a salesperson, all I am is this order taker. I'm going in, you know, schmoozing up and taking orders. But you really want to become a trusted advisor, a consultant, someone who they feel sits on their side of the table, not the opposite side of the table. And that's what you're really becoming by asking these questions. You're figuring out their entire business situation, their personal situation, so you can really advise them. And that's really what you're giving. Even if you're selling software, what you're really giving is you're giving them a solution to their problem. That's what the software actually accomplishes. And the interesting thing that you're talking about, Nick, is that in none of this is there any talk about objections, about resistance, because there's no scope for that. You know, the customer is just really talking about their own selves. But is there a time in the conversation where resistance does come in, where objection does come in? Or let's go a little bit back further at the start of the conversation. What if the customer isn't willing to talk about their internal problems and, you know, all follow through on your line of questioning? What if they're stone cold and they just want to be like, I want ABC, give me ABC. How do you deal with that?
Well, that's a tough situation, because it's challenging to work with somebody if they're unwilling to open up whatsoever. And so I'm of the mind that in any selling situation, if you sense something, you got to say something. And so in that scenario, I might say, hey, I'm getting the sense that you have a very particular direction that you want to go, and you don't really want me to ask you a bunch of these questions. Am I totally off base with that? I think it's okay to like call out when you're in sort of an uncomfortable situation, because I mean, what you guys are doing is really like, I don't know, maybe in a software sale, somebody might just come to me and say, I just want to see the demo. And all right, I might just end up showing them a demo, even though the best practice might be to ask them a bunch of questions to really understand how I'm going to show them a demo. It's a little bit different because what an attorney is doing is really a professional services sale. And to your point, you're right. You're not just getting version A or version B of the software. Like it's professional services. And so if there isn't any trust there from the other person and they're unwilling to open up at all, I don't know if you want to bring that client on, one. Two, how on earth can you help them if you don't understand their situation? Actually, that might be what I would say. If they're not opening up, you probably need to call out, hey, I really want to help you. And based on what you're coming to me with, I think I can help you, but I really need to more deeply understand what you guys are trying to accomplish here in order for me to even know if I can help you. And I feel like if you say that to the, like, that's a thing too. Sometimes admitting that you don't know you can help the other person until you understand more is the best thing that you can do. Because if you just come to me right away and I say, yep, I can help. I'm the best at this. No problem. I've done this before. Well, do you really have any credibility? You're in a selling situation. People inherently distrust salespeople because they're salespeople and they've got this image of the person with the slick back hair who's trying to push them into something they might not need. And so it seems counterintuitive to say, hey, I don't know if I can help you until I understand more. But actually, that's a great way to get the other person to open up, and they end up trusting you more because you're admitting that you're not perfect. Everybody knows you're not perfect. There's no attorney on earth who could handle 100% of 100% of situations and things that exist out there. And so when you tell the other person, I might not be able to help, there might be somebody else who is a better fit to help you out. And so if you can help me understand what you're trying to accomplish, I can let you know whether or not I'm the right person or if there's somebody else, maybe not even at my firm, who could help you. Wow. Talk about a good way to get the other person to open up.
That is such an important point. I think a lot of lawyers have resistance to even getting into these personal questions. And what you're saying pretty much is that it is necessary. It is absolutely crucial for you to ask these personal questions, to actually dig into their situation a lot more, and being okay to be a bit human and saying that, listen, there's this discomfort here. There's this situation where there's this tension and I can't help you unless you open up, and being okay to walk away if they don't want to go there. Because unlike software where you can just show them a demo, in professional services, you don't really have that option. You have to take the client on, and the client can be on for months, weeks or months. And if the situation is that strained right from the beginning, maybe it's not worth taking on that client. And I'm sure Aaron has had situations where with him or his colleagues where you kind of have, there's this misconception. You have to say yes to every single request that comes your way. And the reality is that you don't. You can say no once in a while. If the client doesn't fit with the solutions that you're able to provide them. That's such an important point. And it's also wonderful to know that automatically removes the resistance that they might have to you. By being a little bit human, you can dissolve that resistance. So wonderful point there. You know, I'm really wondering, what do you do at the close? You know, the dreaded close. People think that they got to drive a hard bargain at the very end of it and really make them sign the dotted line. How should a lawyer approach the close of a conversation?
I think you can make it a little more casual. I think there's a lot of people who are like, all right, so are we going to do business together? And like, they ask a very, very direct question, which actually is okay there. I think if you've had a huge conversation where the person has shared a lot about where they're struggling and you believe that you can help them and that they should work with you, it could be as simple as, well, I appreciate everything you've shared with me. I've got a couple ideas about how we can help you. And maybe you've already shared some of those ideas. I have to imagine, so I guess help me understand. I guess the close of a sale for an attorney is a signed engagement letter. Is that right?
Yeah, that often could be the case. Certainly getting them from that initial consult or first interaction, whatever it is, to actually onboarding them as a client, which would usually be that signed engagement letter. Exactly, Nick.
So the way that you just described that is almost perfect, Aaron. You might say, there's a couple ways that I think we can help you. Typically, what folks will do from here so that we can set up a meeting and actually get started on working on this is we would onboard you as a client at the firm. And so typically the next step here would be for me to share an engagement letter with you. And you might explain what an engagement letter is. It says that you're going to be working with me, I'm going to be working with you. And I'm sure there's a couple other details in there, but does that seem like what you'd like to do next? That's what you can ask them. Like, I don't think you need to push them in a box. Like for me, here's an example. I'll just tell you what I do when I do a software demo. I start the demo and I'll propose what the next step would be after that demo. So I'll get on and I'll say, hey guys, thanks for coming to the demo today. I'm excited to show you the software. These initial product demos usually end up going one of two ways. You might see the software that I show you and you think it's the worst thing you've ever seen. You might think it's worse than canned bread. And if that's okay, that's no problem. We would just tell me and we'll go our separate ways. No worries at all. The other outcome might be, all right, this thing looks kind of interesting and you probably want to continue your evaluation of the software. If that's the case, typically the next step is we would go over pricing together. I guess given that we have a stop at 9 o'clock, would you be okay stopping maybe about 5 minutes early to talk about whether or not we move to that next step? That's sort of how I kick off my like product demos, because what I'm doing is I'm proposing, hey, here's what the next step is at the beginning of the meeting. And then at the end, it's pretty casual. It's what we talked about in the beginning. Usually the next step here would be moving on to going over a proposal together. I'm wondering, is that something that you're still interested? Like, do you feel like that's something that we should do? So I guess in the engagement letter scenario, you might not propose that in the beginning of the meeting, but I think it's explaining what happens next. That's a big thing. Like, you don't want to leave them in the void. So I think you can say, well, if you feel like I can help, I think I can help you. I've got a couple ideas. Typically the next step from here would be, I'll connect you with our intake department. And they'll share an engagement letter with you, which is really just a document that says we're going to be working together on this. And it establishes our relationship. Would you like me to put you in touch with my colleague, John, in the intake department?
That makes so much sense.
Yeah, I'm never pushing them into a corner, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think I do a pretty good job of that these days at the end of meetings. But your point about, you know, sort of setting the stage at the start is a good one. And I'm going to have to start doing that. Okay, so let's say we've had that meeting. It went well. You know this from sales, and you deal with sales to law firms and lawyers where the sales cycle is hilariously slow. So you know, keeping momentum going is critical, right? I can think, you know, you have a great call that doesn't always translate right away. And sometimes it's because there's real things happening on the client's end where there's just internal delays. Sometimes maybe they're talking to other lawyers, maybe they forget, maybe it's your fault. How do you keep that momentum going without being pushy, but also by making sure that, you know, you're increasing your likelihood of a successful outcome for you and for the client?
I think you need to get something on the books. It can be as simple as, all right, I'm going to put you in touch with the intake department. They're going to share the engagement letter with you. You might end up having questions about that. And if you do, I'm happy to answer them. You might not, and we might just start right away. I guess given that, you know, and so I think you need to tie it back to something that they said earlier. So maybe I'm trying to think of a good example. The only experience I've had working with attorneys has been setting up an LLC and a risk management program.
We can use an example that you would encounter in your real work. It doesn't need to be one for attorneys.
Perfect.
Or for lawyers.
Okay, great. Okay, so for me, I'm selling it's a practice management system. And so, you know, we might say, all right, well, given that you guys wanted to start your demos, that's maybe a bad example. I'm trying to tie that next step to something that they said earlier. And so if it's hey, given that you want to start your data conversion in the summer, I guess, would you be against putting a calendar invite on the books for next week so that we can talk about the pricing proposal that I sent over and I can answer any questions that you have? Worst case scenario, we just cancel that meeting and move it out further if you're not ready to meet at that time. So I think the right thing to do there is you have to have a planned follow-up with the other person. And I'll often frame it as, hey, like I'll send you an invite for next week. And if that time ends up working, great, we'll meet then. If not, at least it'll serve as a reminder that we need to reconnect. So I think you need to have a planned, all right, we're going to reconnect. I'm sharing some information with you after the fact, whether it's a proposal or you're going to go talk to a couple of your colleagues. But if you just leave this void of, okay, there's nothing else on the books and there's no plan for us to reconnect, well, of course you're going to end up with you've got a client in the void. So I think step one is, especially on that call, so I want you to think about when you've had an hour call with somebody, your rapport with them is really high at the end of the call. And I want you to think about sort of the idea of like cognitive dissonance. You want somebody, if somebody says they'll do something to you, it's really hard for them not to keep that commitment because their brain won't let them. And so what you might do at the end of the call is get their commitment that you're going to reconnect at some point, as opposed to 3 days later being like, oh shoot, hey, did you get a chance to look at what I sent over? So it could be as simple as saying, all right, well, I appreciate your time today. I'm going to share the engagement letter with you. Would you be all right connecting some point next week so that I can answer any questions you have about the engagement letter and we can talk about where we go from here?
That's a great approach. And again, you're thinking about the next step, whereas I think a lot of lawyers sort of think it's one and done. You know, either it's going to work or it's not going to work, and there's no gray area in between. But I think the reality is often there is a period of time in which it's sort of sitting there. And if you're not, you know, following up, if you're not doing the right thing there, your odds of success are so much lower. And I'm just thinking about a client I had last week. It was a cold call out of nowhere from some online advertising I'm doing, free online advertising, I should say, and had a good conversation with them. And, you know, one of the nuggets I got on that call is, you know, they were going to go visit the business they were thinking about buying over the weekend. They had to talk to their spouse. They had to think it through. So naturally, my first thought is, you know, I'm going to make a note to follow up, you know, on Tuesday, you know, to see how that visit went, right? Because they're not going to buy this business unless, or they're not going to need me unless they want to buy the business. Buying the business is completely contingent on that visit. And so there was a natural thing that needed to happen between our first conversation and the follow-up. But sometimes that's not the case. And what I've come to realize over time is, I think as lawyers, we overestimate how important, you know, what we're doing is to the client. But often there's levels of approval internally. There could be so many good reasons, you know, why they haven't gotten back to you or why something's on hold. And we have to switch our mindset from that means they're not interested to, you know, there's something else going on, but they're still interested. And Nick, I guess a question I have for you as we look to wrap up sooner than later, you know, you sell to lawyers and law firms for a living. And that is not an easy thing. As I sort of alluded to, the sales cycle to getting into law firms for tech is so slow. I spent a lot of time in the legal tech space, working with companies, advising them, trying to help them. Why are lawyers so tough to sell to? And I guess my follow-up to that is, how might that be affecting those lawyers when they go out to try to sell their services to others?
What a phenomenal question. I think where lawyers struggle from a sale perspective the most, like what I see them struggling with, is they will miss the forest through the trees. What I mean by that is they'll overfixate on very particular details of, like for me, I'm selling software, of the software that we're selling. And there's certain things that, yes, they do need to do the right due diligence on, like security is a really big one. You know, making sure they're not going to buy something where client data is going to get leaked. But they'll overfixate on very minute details of like the software or the pricing or elements of the solution that they're looking to buy, and not on what it's going to help them accomplish. And so they end up maybe buying something that isn't the right fit for the business because they've overfixated on very small details. If you think about how lawyers then are selling to clients, they'll overfixate on the details or the thing that's right in front of them instead of what is this other human being trying to accomplish and how can I help them accomplish that? So it's almost taking a couple steps back and looking at the bigger picture of, all right, what's the end goal here, guys? Like, I think that's part of it. Like we talked about the good meetings with clients. It's like, what's the goal here? You came to me for a reason. Talk to me about what, before we even talk about what you want me to do, talk to me about what you want to accomplish, because then I can help make a suggestion about what we should do. I'm sure you have some ideas, guys, but tell me what you want to accomplish first, and then we can talk about how we go about it.
That's a great point. You're talking, so far we've been talking a lot about the micro of you know, how do you actually run through the whole sales process, but a lot of our clients often have this issue with, well, how do I fit this in? How do I fit in? Is there like a separate time that I need for my prospecting, for my sales process? How do I juggle that with the actual workflow? What are your thoughts on that?
So from a prospecting perspective, I think you got to live by two sort of mantras. One, eat the frog. Two, time blocking. Eat the frog is the idea of you want to start your day with the most difficult thing first, like the thing that you're dreading the most. The expression comes from if on your to-do list was you had to eat a live frog, you can go about it one of two ways. You could swallow that frog first thing in the morning and just get it over with, or you could let it sit on your desk and it would get slimier and smellier and grosser as the day goes by, and you've still got to do it. And I sort of think of prospecting the same way. You're better off just getting it done right away, get it off your plate, and then move on with your day. The other thing to think about is time blocking. And so what I do is I schedule an hour on my calendar every single day. And the only thing I'm doing in that time is I'm prospecting. I'm sending emails, scheduling phone calls. If I have a number of meetings with prospective customers, I'm trying to schedule those back to back to back because I want to get into that selling headspace, getting in that zone once throughout the day. What I don't want to do is jump back and forth between getting work done for customers and then I'm prospecting a little bit and then I'm getting other work done and then I'm prospecting more. It's really prospecting, especially for like if I think about an attorney doing it, it's not their maybe core competency. And so it's incredibly, even for like, I'm a pretty experienced salesperson, it's exhausting. It's exhausting mentally and it wears on you mentally. And so what you want to do is almost treat it like an athlete would a workout. You get in really intensely for an hour and then you get out. And that sort of eases the anxiety and tension. Like you might get rejected on a couple cold calls, but once you've been rejected a couple times in a row, it sort of makes you a little more callous to it. And then you can push through the rest of the day. And then it's also really time efficient. You want to just have your list of who you're going to call ready, make all of those calls in succession, and then you can move on with your day.
I'm trying to get a lot better at the time blocking, you know, whether it's calling people, emailing, whatever, but stacking stuff together. And because I need that deep work time to actually get my day job done. But I find it's really easy. You know, if you don't make the time for these kind of things, whatever business development looks like to you as a lawyer, it's often not going to happen. And it's interesting, Nick, you know, we got connected in the first place because I started listening to your podcast, you know, when I started to do more business development and more sales, and I realized I need to look to people outside the legal profession because I'm not seeing too many role models in the legal profession who seem to understand modern sales. I see some, you know, more experienced lawyers who got lucky or who had great family connections or did stuff their way, but I wasn't seeing too many examples of people I knew, former colleagues, things like that, where they were doing stuff in a way that was authentic, for me at least, in a way that was efficient and all of that. But clearly, you know, this is not just something lawyers struggle with. If you've got a podcast on this, you know, salespeople are constantly learning. Practices are still evolving. Is that fair to say?
I think it's totally fair to say. And I think everybody struggles selling. Every single person, like, you know, we talked about, it's not really a natural thing for anybody to sell because it can sort of be uncomfortable and you're going to deal with rejection and that really hurts. And so, yeah, it is always evolving. But I would caution folks against over biasing towards wanting to learn the latest sales technique as opposed to getting out there and okay. I mean, maybe you think about the law of diminishing returns. Maybe you spend a couple hours like reading and learning and listening about, all right, some selling best practices. But then you need to get out and actually start having conversations with prospective customers because it's really easy to get stuck in this, well, I'm learning more. I'm going to start prospecting when I learn a little bit more. I need to learn a little bit more. I need to do a little more research. And then next thing you know, 3 months have gone by and you haven't made a single cold call. You haven't sent a single email. So I think you need to be cautious about over-learning. But yeah, I mean, it can be fun to listen to podcasts when you're sitting in traffic because you might pick up something new.
That's exactly the way you kind of present your podcast. You don't need a 400-page book or a 3-hour podcast to learn sales. The heart of it is pretty simple, and the heart of it is in many ways unchanged. It's about understanding and respecting the other person that you're talking with, understanding their situation, their problems, and finding a way to help them. That's the heart of what a sales process really looks like. And this has been a real treat because we've spent a lot of time talking about all the stuff that happens before the client comes and speaks to you about the your services. We've talked a lot about marketing. We've talked a lot about the philosophy and mindset of it all. But this has really been the first time where we really dug into the actual sales meeting, what the actual sales process, what do you do during the thing? What do you do after the thing? And the most important insight here is that you don't really have to wrestle with the client. And I know you're a wrestler yourself, and you know, you're really proving the fact that you don't have to wrestle with the client. You have to sort of nurture them. You're giving them somewhat of a therapy session in that 30 minutes or an hour or whatever it might be, giving them the space to talk, be candid, be frank, be open, and then finding a way to help them out. So it's been such a incredible way of you know, learning about this whole thing. I know you say you don't really need to read all these tons of books or any of that stuff. If there were a few resources, two or three resources that every lawyer should definitely check out with regards to sales, what do you think they should be? What books, maybe mentors, or obviously your podcast? You know, what do you think might be the right place for a person to start?
Well, I hate to beat my chest about my podcast, but I think Aaron has gotten some value out of it. So listen to that. I mean, I would listen to this podcast a lot. One of the most impactful books that has helped me, it's a book called Fanatical Prospecting. It's written by a guy, his name's Jeb Blunt.
Absolutely.
And the book talks a lot about the rhythm of building your pipeline and prospective customers. And it can be really tough if you wait until you're like, oh my gosh, I don't really have any business. I need to do a massive push from a prospecting perspective. That's exhausting and overwhelming, and it doesn't really work, as opposed to being disciplined and consistent and having some rigor around every day. If every day you made 5 cold calls, which would take you about 20 minutes, you'd have no problem building a really massive pipeline. The problem is, most people get into these peaks and valleys from a prospecting perspective. And I think Jeb in that book talks about 830 different prospecting approaches that you could take. And then he also talks about tying that with some rigor and discipline so that you're consistent in your outreach.
And if people want to find you, where can they find you?
Well, my first name's easy. It's N-I-C-K. The last name's a little tougher. It's Cegelski, C-E-G-E-L-S-K-I. If you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, I accept all LinkedIn requests except the ones where people say, Nick, I found your profile very interesting. I would love to connect, because those are usually just spam messages or the people trying to sell me leads. So if you heard me on here, send me a LinkedIn message. Tell me you heard me on the Build Your Book podcast. And I always like helping folks, and I like talking with attorneys. So get with me on LinkedIn.
Well, that's a wonderful place to end it. We'll put all this stuff in the show notes where you can actually find the book you talked about, Fanatical Prospecting. It's a great book. And your podcast and your social media kind of page. Great having you on today, Nick.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me here.
For show notes from this episode and all previous ones, go to buildyourbook.org/podcast. Make sure to subscribe to it on Apple iTunes, Google, Spotify, or wherever it is that you find your podcast from. Share it with your friends and colleagues. And if you have any questions you'd like us to cover, send us a message on podcast@buildyourbook.org. And if you'd like personalized coaching to help you build your book of business, go on to buildyourbook.org/contact. Until next week, take care.